It is Wednesday, November 11th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the president of Myanmar congratulates opposition leader Aung San Suu Kyi on the apparent victory of her National League for Democracy party. Republican presidential candidates debate immigration and foreign policy. Afghan security forces fire warning shots near protesters.
These demonstrators tried to storm the gate of the presidential palace because they have been demanding that the government should immediately address their demands or their complaints that there should be security for the civilians.
And Italian singer Andrea Bocelli releases a new CD. It's all ahead. Well, the president of Myanmar, Thein Sein, has congratulated Aung San Suu Kyi, who's the opposition leader, as well as her National League for Democracy party, for their apparent victory in the parliamentary elections over the military-backed Union Solidarity and Development Party. I'm joined now by VOA Southeast Asia correspondent Steve Herman. So, Steve, this looks like quite a sizable victory for the NLD.
There's little doubt now that the opposition NLD is heading towards a landslide victory. And what is more remarkable is that the government is now acknowledging that and reaching out to Aung San Suu Kyi and the NLD and saying from the president's office directly that President Thein Sein will work for a peaceful transition of power. And the president apparently has also accepted Aung San Suu Kyi's request for a meeting on, quote, national reconciliation with the government and the army chief. And, of course, the military, very powerful in Myanmar, 25% of the seats in the parliament reserved for the military, as well as key ministries that remain in the hands of the military, no matter what happens with this election.
Has there been any statement since this from the government, from Aung San Suu Kyi?
We have not had a statement issued directly by her beyond the party officials at NLD headquarters releasing some details of this letter that came from the president in Naypyidaw. She has been fairly reserved in her comments since the election. She has told people not to cause trouble with celebrations, to wait for the results. She's instructed victorious politicians not to give interviews and not even to post on social media. Everyone seems to be waiting until these results are official from the Union Election Commission. There had been some concerns expressed by the NLD and some protests, especially about some of the advance votes, the absentee ballots. But regardless of what happens with those ballots, there's little doubt that overall for the parliamentary seats, it is going to be a landslide victory for the NLD.
And is there any indication yet as to when this vote counting process will conclude?
Well, it's coming out in dribs and drabs. A couple times a day, we're getting updates on the parliamentary seats. The UEC, the Election Commission, had said earlier that they would continue to release results through Sunday, which would be 1 week after the election. But I think within another day or two, we're going to see the official count take the NLD over the threshold of giving it an absolute majority in the parliament.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Steve. That is VOA Southeast Asia correspondent Steve Herman. Well, a satirical video about Myanmar's election is getting attention on Facebook. International Edition's Michael Lippin is in the studio to tell us more about it. Michael, where's this video from?
Hi, Sarah. Well, it's an animated clip from Taiwan's Next Media Animation TV, which has been making humorous videos about world events for years and getting lots of followers in the process. They've got 147,000 likes for their Facebook page, which you can find by searching for Next Media Animation. One of their latest video clips, which is about 1 minute and 40 seconds long, tries to explain the significance of Aung San Suu Kyi and her party winning a landslide victory in Myanmar's election. I found out about the clip, actually, because Steve Herman tweeted a link to it. I don't want to give too much of the storyline away, but the Next Media video starts with an animated Suu Kyi looking like an action hero and standing on a cliff, while Myanmar's military-backed current leaders stand on a tank far below. Then Suu Kyi jumps off the cliff as a landslide buries the tank, and she lands on the huge pile of earth, raising her arms in victory. Not only that, but then you hear a bell as if it's a boxing match that just ended, and then a boxing referee appears out of nowhere and lifts up Suu Kyi's arm. And there are, quite a few more visual jokes like that in the clip, but as I say, you should watch the clip before I spoil it for you.
Well, what kind of response did the clip get?
Well, it was posted about 18 hours ago, and in that time, it's had more than 1,000 shares and 500 likes, which is pretty decent. But on a more serious note, one Facebook user by the name of Nanda Mala took issue with a reference in the video to the Rohingya, the stateless Muslim minority in Myanmar. The user, who appears to be Burmese, said, "We would like to protest the use of the word Rohingya. There's no ethnic tribe with that name in Myanmar. It's just a sham name given to themselves by illegal immigrants. By the way, other legal Muslim citizens could vote in the last election." And that was the view of Facebook user Nanda Mala. Now, of course, rights groups take a different view. They see the Rohingya as a persecuted minority that is denied basic rights like the right to vote. Sarah?
Okay, thanks very much, Michael. That's International Edition's Michael Lippin. Well, in other news, the top eight Republican presidential contenders clashed over immigration, foreign policy, the economy, and each other Tuesday in the fourth Republican debate, this time held in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and broadcast on the Fox Business Network. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more from Washington.
One of the biggest clashes of the night came over immigration, the issue that has helped businessman Donald Trump shoot to the top of the polls. Trump defended his plan to deport millions of illegal immigrants.
You're going to have to send people out. Look,
we're
a country of laws. We either have a country or we don't have a country.
Trump was challenged by Ohio Governor John Kasich.
But for the 11 million people, come on, folks. We all know you can't pick them up and ship them across back across the border. It's a silly argument.
And by former Florida Governor Jeb Bush.
To send them back 500,000 a month is just not possible. And it's not embracing American values. And it would tear communities apart.
But Texas Senator Ted Cruz said securing the border was essential.
And we can embrace legal immigrations while believing in the rule of law.
Foreign policy was also a major focus, including Russia's intervention in Syria and confronting the Islamic State. Businesswoman Carly Fiorina.
We must have a no-fly zone in Syria because Russia cannot tell the United States of America where and when to fly our planes.
Ben Carson and Marco Rubio said the Islamic State remains a key threat.
You have to continue to face them because our goal is not to contain them, but to destroy them before they destroy us.
Either they win or we win. We better take this risk seriously. It is not going away on its own.
But Senator Rand Paul warned about the dangers of further military involvement in both Syria and Iraq.
If you're ready for that, be ready to send your sons and daughters to another war in Iraq. I don't want to see that happen.
The Republicans will debate again in mid-December. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
NASA recently announced that their Mars Atmosphere and Volatile Evolution, or MAVEN mission, may have solved a decades-old mystery of what happened to the Martian atmosphere and its water. Evidence suggests that at one time early in its history, Mars had a thick atmosphere, rich in carbon dioxide, that kept the planet warm enough to allow for liquid water to flow over its surface. The new MAVEN findings show that the thick Martian atmosphere of its distant past was stripped away from the planet billions of years ago by the solar wind when the sun was young and much more active than today. The solar wind is a stream of high-energy particles that are produced in the sun's atmosphere and are blasted through the solar system at speeds as high as 900 kilometers per second and at temperatures of 1 million degrees Celsius. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, singer Andrea Bocelli releases a new album inspired by the music of film. Thousands of Afghans have protested in Kabul against the beheading earlier this week of seven civilians, including three women, by militants allegedly linked to the Islamic State. I'm joined now by reporter Ayaz Ghul, who's in Islamabad. Ayaz, I understand that security forces have fired near this crowd, but apparently not at them.
Yes, that's right. Actually, these demonstrators tried to storm the gate of the presidential palace because they have been demanding that the government should immediately address their demands or their complaints that there should be security for the civilians and that the government has failed. So they are quite angry, and the demonstration is still going on. So when some of them tried to storm the gate of the presidential palace, then Kabul police, in fact, fired in the air to disperse them. And they have been successful in keeping these protesters from attacking the presidential palace.
Now, the victims, when were their bodies found?
Well, this was a group of ethnic Hazara, the minority community, Shiite community in Afghanistan. A group of people were kidnapped more than a month ago, allegedly by fighters of the Islamic State, while they were traveling from the province of Ghazni to the southern Zabul province. And then this past Sunday, headless corpses of seven of them were found by security forces. They included three women. And that's what outraged most Afghans. And there have been protests since Sunday. But this morning's protests, this was quite a massive rally today, which started early in the morning. And they passed through the streets of Kabul before arriving in front of the presidential palace and demanding that President Ashraf Ghani and the chief executive, Abdullah Abdullah, both should resign because they have failed, according to them, in providing security to civilians.
And I believe that one of the victims was a young girl?
Yes, among the three females, one was a young girl, and that's what the United Nations said in its condemnation statement today. And it has, once again, called this a war crime, the UN mission in Afghanistan. But let me just tell you that this is the first time that we have seen that militants operating in Afghanistan have murdered women or females. It's quite a significant development, and it's quite scary for the people in Afghanistan because so far we have seen that militants have been targeting security forces, police in Afghanistan. But killing civilians and including women and beheading them is the first incident of its kind. And I think over the last few weeks, we have seen that the Taliban, they have increased their attacks across Afghanistan. And we have seen Islamic State fighters are operating in other parts, particularly in eastern Afghanistan. So this sense of insecurity actually has led to this anger that we have witnessed today during this demonstration in Kabul. Seven beheadings is one incident, but the overall security has deteriorated to an extent that today most of the demonstrators were demanding that President Ashraf Ghani and Abdullah Abdullah, the chief executive, both should resign because they have failed to protect civilians. So I think this is going to bring more pressure on the government. But at the same time, it has also prompted anger against even the Taliban. This beheading has now outraged people against the Taliban, even if they were supporting this Islamist insurgency in some parts of the country. But this incident now has really put pressure on the insurgents operating in the country, whether they are Daesh, the Islamic State, or the Taliban, because the kind of anger we are witnessing is quite unprecedented right now in Afghanistan.
All right. Thanks very much, Ayaz. That's Ayaz Ghul reporting from Islamabad. Every year on November 11th, the United States honors the selfless service of millions of veterans. Men and women from all corners of America enlist in the armed forces to serve the country. But what happens when they get back to civilian life and find no place for themselves in the workforce? Alberto Pimienta has the story.
In 2012, Joshua Pelling, a young Army veteran, got job rejection after job rejection.
As veterans, we don't ask for handouts. We just want that chance. And I know many employers that I approached upon getting out didn't want to give me a chance.
During his time in the Army, Joshua worked in maintenance for helicopters, but when he went back to civilian life, he couldn't get a job.
It was very disheartening to feel that way as somebody who felt like I served my time, and there were some times that I did feel stuck.
After September 11, 2001, the United States sent hundreds of thousands of troops to Afghanistan and Iraq. American culture prides itself on the noble service of veterans. However, more than 7% of those who served after 9/11 are unemployed, higher than the national average.
There are skills that we use to prepare for war and that we use in war. When we take those home and we come back, there are all sorts of stigmas that are associated with that.
But in 2015, he heard of Ennis to Serves, a nonprofit created by SAP National Security Services to train veterans in data management, an industry with a high demand for recruits. Retired Vice Admiral Joe Kernan runs the three-month program.
They could come here with virtually nothing, and candidly, four or five of them have. They've come here from nothing. They came off the street. They didn't have a place to live. They didn't have a job, and they said, listen, I got to get through this course. I mean, this is my life.
Ennis to Serves has turned around the lives of many young veterans. The opportunity gave Joshua purpose.
It's just been an incredible journey. I have a sense of direction now. I feel that there's hope for the future.
Alberto Pimienta for VOA News, Herndon, Virginia.
This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. Italian singer Andrea Bocelli is the winner of multiple awards for his classical and pop recordings. Now he has a new CD that pays tribute to the music that inspired him as a child. International Edition's David Byrd tells us about Cinema, which features hits from West Side Story, Breakfast at Tiffany's, Gladiator, and others.
Maria, I just met a girl named Maria, and suddenly that name will never be the same to me.
Andrea Bocelli says he was always inspired by songs from the movies. The singer fell in love with the songs he heard as a child that he didn't know came from movie soundtracks. Now he has teamed with his longtime collaborating producers David Foster, Umberto Gatica, and Tony Renis for Cinema. Bocelli says that he loves the freedom composers have in the movies to express the full range of emotions.
Well, my relationship with the movies is not so strong, because since when I was younger, I didn't like to stay in a old seat with many other people, you know, for all the afternoon. And I preferred to see the movie at home with my family, in case. But I had a great relationship with the music of the movies, because the music of the movies is a very inspired and free and beautiful music.
No llores por mi Argentina, mi alma está contigo.
Bocelli has chosen songs from a variety of films, including Evita, Breakfast at Tiffany's, The Phantom of the Opera, Gladiator, The Scent of a Woman, and Dr. Zhivago. The 57-year-old Italian singer, fresh off a performance for Pope Francis during the pontiff's visit to the United States, says that singing pop requires a different kind of expressiveness than singing opera.
When you sing pop, you are like, you are singing like a very close to and the ear of a child, you know, because the microphone is very close to your mouth and you can whisper your emotion in the microphone. It's completely a different way. But the technique for the breath, the breath technique is the same.
Che più ti penso, e più mi manchi.
Bocelli, who has recorded duets with Celine Dion and Sarah Brightman on previous albums, includes one on Cinema with pop star Ariana Grande. The song E Più Ti Penso from the 1984 epic crime drama Once Upon a Time in America was re-recorded as a duet. The tune debuted at number one on Billboard's Classical Digital Songs chart. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
That's the music of Andrea Bocelli. Well, as I noted earlier in the show, it is Veterans Day here in the United States. President Barack Obama today saluted the men and women of the armed forces and those who have served the country's military in the past. The president hosted a breakfast at the White House for veterans and their families and later took part in a ceremony at the Tomb of the Unknowns in Arlington National Cemetery, where he laid a wreath and spoke. Mr. Obama called on American businesses to increase their hiring of veterans leaving military service. And that's our show for today. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks very much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Azerbaijan held parliamentary elections on November 1st. Unfortunately, the government of Azerbaijan did not allow the OSCE's Office for Democratic Institutions and Human Rights, or ODIHR, to field its necessary number of observers, and therefore OIDHR was not able to monitor the elections. Without the participation of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, or OSCE, said the director of the Office of Press Relations at State Department, Elizabeth Trudeau, it is impossible for us to say that Azerbaijan has made progress on previous election observation recommendations, which identified and sought to address limitations to fundamental freedoms. The United States continues to have concerns about the restrictive political environment in Azerbaijan and has urged the government of Azerbaijan to respect the freedoms of peaceful assembly, association, and independent voices, including the media, as part of its international commitments. The United States remains committed to working with the government and people of Azerbaijan in their effort to ensure a strong, stable, democratic, and prosperous future.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.